back together again, you and I, Monday style, brand new week, April 8th, 2024, on Connecticut Today, where we welcome to Quinnipiac University Assistant Teaching Professor of Physics, Dr. Robert Fischetti, on to talk about the big solar eclipse that had the region fascinated. Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill also stopped by for his weekly chat as well. Let's get a final word today on the eclipse. What exactly happened in case you missed it, in case you were living under a rock? How did students react to it? Joining us right now is Dr. Robert Fischetti. He's an assistant teaching professor of physics at Quinnipiac University in Hamden. Hey, Dr. Fischetti, it's Paul at WICC. Good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, good afternoon. I'm doing great. We're just finishing up the eclipse event at Quinnipiac.
Yeah. So, what was the reaction there? Tell my listeners. Were a lot of people awed by it? Was it more just a scientific thing? What was the vibe you got from it?
So it was really a rare event to be able to appreciate, which is what we tried to encourage the students. I got to tell you, there was probably about 1,000 people at one point.
Wow.
On the lawn of the campus, all around our telescope. So we had 3 telescopes set up. Everybody, once they got settled in and realized what was going on and started looking at the telescopes, it was really good energy all around. So kind of good vibes. Everybody was appreciating this rare celestial event.
And as a teacher, as an assistant teaching professor of physics here, I think sometimes we abuse this phrase, but I think not this time, a really good teachable moment, right? Physics, orbital mechanics, astronomy, I mean, it's all there.
Oh, you got it. Yeah, I had my students helping out as working the telescopes, and the questions never stopped coming. People are so curious. I mean, the 1,000 people, not having studied astronomy, maybe not having taken physics, they're curious, very curious.
And, you know, it's interesting. I was on, a little social media this morning. And not faulting anybody, but as you say, you know, astronomy in the realm of things is not really top of mind of a lot of people, although it should be. I find it fascinating. But I drew back on my being a little space runt growing up and being captivated by the Gemini program and the Apollo program and actually having great teachers who taught us this when this was a really big deal. So, you know, I feel blessed in that way. And sometimes, you know, Dr. Fischetti, it's sad that this isn't like really a big deal. It is. But as you say, with all the questions you got, you're probably there saying, geez, it's too bad more people don't understand and embrace physics and astronomy.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we take space for granted now. We open up our phone and hit the GPS button and we're relying on all of that experience from the Gemini program and the early space travel, just learning how to go to space. We certainly take it for granted now. But, you know, when people do sit back for an hour and look up at the sun being covered up, they get curious again. So it was very nice to see people for an hour of their lives be able to appreciate that in the way that maybe they had more time to do in the past or more focus on.
Yeah, excellent. Absolutely. Well, congrats on the great event, Dr. Robert Fischetti. He's an assistant teaching professor of physics at Quinnipiac University. Dr. Fischetti, thank you. We appreciate it. Take care, and hopefully we can chat down the road.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Dr. Robert D. Fischetti III, assistant teaching professor of physics at Quinnipiac University. And Terry Cowgill joins us every Monday at this time, a columnist, writer, the Connecticut News Junkie, and blogger at Substack.com. Terry lives among many wild and unwild animals in his section of Connecticut. Terry, was there any change in the fauna during the eclipse that you could tell or not?
I noticed no change. You know, things were kind of hazy up here.
Yeah.
So I was out for my afternoon walk, and I did notice that it got darker.
Yeah.
But that was about it, you know. And apparently the animals really freak out when you have a total eclipse.
Yeah.
I mean, they just don't know what to make of it.
So was the, as is being reported around the country, and I just had a Quinnipiac professor on, about 1,000 people on the quad at Quinnipiac. Some, he said, were really moved by this. Terry, were you moved by this, or was this just a simple case in your mind, as it was of mine, of orbital mechanics?
Yeah, well, orbital mechanics is a good way to put it. I think all this did was, it was a brief sort of phenomenon.
Yeah.
But I just wasn't, I gave a thought of actually traveling up to Quebec, where I went to college, and going up there because my college was having a party, basically on the football field, viewing party.
Why not?
Yeah, but I just didn't know whether or not the weather was going to cooperate, and I didn't want to make any advanced plans, and it just seemed ridiculous. And I just thought, well, I'll just stay here, and I'll talk to Paul at 5:15, and then I'll pour myself a glass of wine and call it a day.
That's it. See, I like you. And recall, as I did, the fortunate part of taking astronomy classes in both high school and college. But let's talk, Terry, about the economy here. You sent me an interesting piece, and I sent you a companion piece. This whole dynamic of the economy in this election is interesting, because you have some people saying talk about it, some people saying don't talk about it, and a lot of people, including people, Terry, that call into my show and send me emails of saying, hey, I see all these numbers, but I'm just not seeing it.
Yeah, I think that really is the problem politically, right? And that things are better, objectively better, than they were 2 years ago. All you have to do is look at the numbers, but most people are not feeling it. So if you're Biden, the Biden campaign, and the president's running for re-election, and you brag about the economy and say how good it is, then it just makes you, to the people who aren't feeling it, it just makes you feel or look out of touch.
Yeah.
And that's a real problem if you're trying to run a campaign. So I think they're really behind a rock and a hard place here and trying to figure out a strategy.
I had a guy, Terry, this must have been about 2 months ago. I was heading into Stop and Shop in Wallingford, picking up something on the way home. And I kind of moved to my right because I could see a guy coming, out the same door. And he started talking to me, an older guy, maybe in his 60s. And I thought I knew him, and I didn't, but he made me laugh, because here's a guy, Terry, out of the blue. I never met this guy. And I say, excuse me, and out of the blue, Terry, he had like 3 bags in his cart, and he goes, look at this. And I said, yeah. He goes, $150. Can you believe it? So here's a guy, Terry, and I'm saying to myself, do I know this guy? He just chose me at that particular time to vent. That was it.
Yeah, and ironically, food is one sector where prices have been held under control for a long, long time, and that they really, food prices have not kept up with inflation over the last 50 years or so. And I know it might be unpopular to say that, and that I'm not rooting for them to keep up with inflation, but in the food production system, we have wrung so many efficiencies out of that system that producing food, everything from dairy to beef to vegetables, the cost of producing the food has come way down because of economies of scale and automation. But people still complain about it. I think we Americans actually have been spoiled by the relatively low prices of food. So we see them go up and we're just like, my God, this is unbearable. But I don't think it occurs to the average person that actually, it's really not that bad. There are some sectors where things have really gone up, especially lately, interest rates, because that's the chief tool, the chief weapon that the federal government has to bring down inflation. And raising interest rates is just as unpopular as inflation itself. So you have the double whammy there.
Yeah, especially for folks with credit cards, variable interest rate loans, car loans, and all that. Of course, Terry Cowgill is the guest. Terry, you sent me something out of Reason, which is one of my favorite magazines slash websites. Really good, down the middle kind of libertarian website. And something that always pops up its ugly head here in Connecticut every so often, opportunity or not to sell beer on Sunday and watch the old blue laws here.
Well, I this is kind of a pet peeve of mine because I'm somebody who hates I hate it when certain business sectors are protected by the law against competition or from competition. And Connecticut's package stores are a classic example of being protected from competition. Because for the longest time, of course, Sunday sales were prohibited, largely because of our puritanical past. We had these blue laws.
Yeah.
In fact. And there were, Dan Malloy, you could say what you want to about Dan Malloy. he was the liquor's best governor in terms of liquor freedom and liquor justice, right? Because he was the one who proposed getting rid of the Sunday ban on sales. And predictably enough, the Connecticut Package Store Association said that they'd lose, 150 stores would close. They'd lose 600 jobs if that happened, blah, blah, blah. Well, none of that happened. There was a recent study here by some UConn researchers, and they determined that, no, it didn't happen. And now the greatest push, of course, is to allow grocery stores to sell wine.
Yeah.
And the Connecticut Package Store Association is doing its crybaby best to do the same thing. Oh, this will be a disaster for us. Well, they already cried wolf once. And I really don't believe that allowing the grocery stores to sell wine is going to decimate Connecticut package stores because they can offer things that the large chains can't, which is better service, people who know the product better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they've got to do is focus on how to compete rather than just sitting there and say we shouldn't have to compete.
Yeah, like I know this one guy comes in for this wine that nobody else buys because it's so damn expensive, but he buys three bottles a month from me. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That and you can train your staff in a small package store to be better versed on wine and wine suitability for certain meals and familiarity with a lot of the terms and they can be great at recommending stuff that probably, some guy who works in the middle of the Stop and Shop doesn't know that much about it,
To tell me a regular supermarket guy or gal wouldn't recommend a good Beaujolais Nouveau for me? Is that what you're insinuating here?
No, probably not, nor, Cabernet or Merlot or anything like that. It's probably all the same. It's probably just, fortified grape juice for some of these folks.
Boone's Farm, my friend. Now, listen, the more liquor available on Sunday, and I'm a New York Jets fan, so 7 months out of the year, that's good for me, more booze on Sunday. Let's wrap it up, Terry, something you pointed out here. That's going on in Virginia with journalism here. What's up with that, and might that be coming to Connecticut?
Yeah, well, and it's less about journalism itself than about the business of journalism. And what has happened is that the Virginia legislature finally, there are these laws that require the government, whenever it has legal notices, not just the state government, but local governments, They have to publish legal notices, and currently the only place you can publish them to satisfy the law in Connecticut is in a print newspaper.
Yeah.
Right? Now, print newspapers are dying, as you know, and most people don't even pick up print newspapers anymore, which is one of the reasons that they're dying.
Mm-hmm.
They had some hearings on getting rid of that. And either allowing the government to advertise in online publications like CT News Junkie, for example, which can't take legal advertising right now. The law doesn't permit it. Or allowing towns in the state to publish legal notices on their own websites. Now, all of this stuff would save money.
Yeah.
Right? Right now, requiring these notices to be published in print newspapers is a form of corporate welfare. It's rent-seeking. It's all it is. And So the Virginia legislature just passed a bill allowing for the publication of these notices in online-only publications. That, to me, is a no-brainer. But, of course, the newspaper industry will fight it tooth and nail because they charge outrageous prices for these legal notices. Mm-hmm. And it's one of their only sources of revenue now because, you know, the display advertising, the classified advertising is completely gone, almost completely gone on all of these papers. So they'll fight it tooth and nail.
Yeah, and the thing, the trend I've noticed in these, not just in Connecticut here, but Terry, as you say, with the tough time newspapers are having, especially if they're battling with, even online, if they're battling with sites like the Connecticut News Junkie or like the Connecticut Mirror or like the Inside Investigator folks at the Yankee Institute or like the New Haven Independent, I mean, you have all these micro sites now, quote unquote, that do a great job. So, yeah, I can see where they want to hold on to as much territory as they can.
Yeah, and you know the argument for print is, well, what if somebody doesn't have a computer? Yeah. What if they don't, have access to the internet? And my response is always, then they can go to their local public library and mm-hmm. a professional librarian. My wife is a librarian.
Okay,
a professional librarian will help you find what you need. They love helping people, and they'll do it for you. So, get rid of that law, please. It would make me happy.
All right. Terry Cowgill, the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com, and substack.com, raw meat for mushy moderates. Terry, thanks. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you, sir.
Very good, Paul. Thank you.
Take care. Terry Cowgill up in the quiet northwest corner of the state. All right. There you go.